Okay, so we go back to the latter half of the Gemara here. So the Gemara had said, remember, everyone agrees the assumption of our Gemara is over la'asiyata. You have to make the bracha before you perform the mitzvah. Minolan, Damar Vidur, Shmuel, Kol HaMitzvot Mevarach Alein, over la'asiyata. All mitzvah you do over to their performance. My mashma the over lishna d'abdumehu. Again, how do you know that over means before? ... Fine. Then if you skip down to after the proofs, the Gemara had said, Beirav Amri, Beirav says, All mitzvah, chutz min ha-tivilah, tivilah, because I know some people thought I said tivilah, not tivilah, tivilah, besides for immersion in a mikvah, the shofar, and the blowing of the shofar. The Gemara says, Bishlama tevila de'akati gafra lochazi. I understand that by mikvah, the reason that you can't say the bracha is because the person is not yet. Stop making assumptions. Gavra lochazi, the person is not yet. What is chazi?
Done. Chazi.
Like what does chazi mean? See. Chazi means to see. What does it mean? What is the equivalent in Hebrew?
Ra'oi.
It doesn't mean to see, but it means proper. Meaning it's not. Evil, same idea, right?
Those words are similar.
Yeah. Fine, he is not yet Ra'oi. I'll come back to Mo's point in just a second of why he is not worthy, but he is not yet worthy, not yet capable of going to the mikvah. I'm sorry, breaking a bracha. Ela shofar my time. Why shofar? V'chitem l'mishum dilma mikalkala. And you'll say maybe he's going to mess up, and the bracha will be levatala. Once you're worried about people messing up, that's true of all mitzvah. So therefore, the Gemara says you're right. Elamor chisa chutz menat tvi'la bilvav. Tvi'la is unique. Tvi'la is unique. Elamor itmar tani navi hachi taval v'Allah. He goes to the mikvah and he comes out. We already talked briefly about this point of Ve'Allah. Right? Is Ve'Allah part of going to the mikvah or not? Ba'aliyato, Omer, Baruch, Asher, Kiddushanu, Mivitzvotav, Vitzivanu, Al HaTivila. Okay? Well, what we want to do today is figure out, well, what are we talking about here? What Tivila are we talking about? And why is that Tivila not... Well, why is it the person can't make a bracha before said immersion? That's it. That's the question we need to deal with. Good. So, if I asked you, okay, which tevilah, what possibilities do you have for me?
He's
Ger. Why would you say Ger? So now we have to do which one, and then we have to figure out what lochazi means in this circumstance, right? So if it's Ger, why would it be Lo Chazi?
He's
not a Jew.
Yeah. He so can't, no. Make, can't make brachas yet.
Mitzvah, bracha, etc.
Yeah.
Right?
Makes sense.
Lo Chazi, he's not a Jew, he's not Chayav Mitzvah, right? Yeah. He can't say Vitziva, there's no bracha, etc. Yeah, that's not how bracha works. But that's not how bracha works, yeah, right? But he also... So we do make an exception. We make it, you can say the bracha afterwards, right?
Or maybe he should be saying a shout-out before because he really loves...
I mean, sure, you could come up with something and say, well, maybe, okay, you could come up with something. It could be, right? But the point is, right, one Basel, he's a Ger. The reason I'm Chazi, he's not Jewish, whatever exactly that means. Right, he's not Tzivanu, he's not whatever. Then, and if you wanted to say that, yeah, you have to figure out, are we chayev to accept Gerim? What is the nature of that mitzvah? Right? Once there is a Ger, you have to treat them properly, but how proactive is that mitzvah? Things get complicated. This is one possibility. What's the other possibility? What?
He's Tame.
Perfect. Which tevilah?
Spelled. Bakar, yeah, sure.
All tevilah. All. Why?
Hey, maybe.
Technicality. Adam says, it's a technicality. We don't, because once we have tefillah of ger, we already.
We just changed the way you say bracha, what we call in halacha.
Low cloak. You're right, there's no good reason to not do it, but whatever, for whatever reason, we just said, once you.
Tame, maybe
once we said it by a ger, tefillah, the bracha is made afterwards, we made an objective rule that all tefillah, it's afterwards. Why? Because we did. Lo plug. We don't make distinctions. No. We're talking about once you're chayavin. So,
for example, if you have nida, you have carry, sometimes, right? Well, made is actually, right? Made is different, right? Made you need, right? You mean more than that, right? But yeah, but right, nida, carry, whatever, right?
What's the other possibility?
He's not allowed to make a bracha on his tummy.
Right. Or, also, not chazi. Let's leave it
vague. The other tefillot are also not chazi before he goes to the mikvah. Yeah? Right. So those are the three possibilities we have, right? I think. Which tefillah is only ger, right, because he's not Jewish. All tefillot, either because of a technicality or a fundamental reason, right? This is. If you looked at the Rishonim, this is a basic map of the Rishonim. Yeah?
Yeah.
All I want to do is plug this in, because this is a very important halacha l'maaseh. In fact, it is an entire siman in Shulchan Aruch.
Siman.
Rich.
Okay, fine.
Right?
I wasn't expected to know that. Okay.
No, but it's here, number 7.
Oh, okay.
Right? Siman Reish. Right? Okay. Siman Reish. Okay? And I want to deal the part with our sugya, and then hopefully we'll have time and I'll give you like 10 minutes of halacha l'maaseh, because there are other issues involved besides with this sugya, right? But if we're doing the sugya, I'd like you to understand the halachic issues that emerge from the sugya. Okay? Fine. So let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, Dakati gavra lo chazi. Actually, you know what? Hold off. I'll take Rashi in a second. Look at Tosvot first. Tosvot. Omer Rabbeinu Chananel b'shem ha-gaon. D'davka b'tvila ger d'lo chazi kodem tvila. D'lo motzi l'meimer v'tzivanu dakati nachri hu. Rabbeinu Chananel. Right? Rabbeinu Chananel quotes the gaon. Because of this, right?
Yep.
Rabbeinu Chananel, the shame, Hagaon, right? Which is this, is no Vitzivanu, because he's not a Jew.
Who does Gaon typically refer to in Tosos?
Well, it's not in Tosos. It's in the name of Rabbeinu Chananel. It's Rabbeinu Chananel quoting Hagaon.
Okay.
Right? So I don't actually know which Gaon he's talking about here. Hi, maybe?
Hi.
I'm not sure. Right, so that is what he says very simple. This is exceptional because he can't say Vitzivanu. He's not Jewish. He's not part of the group, the covenant, and therefore he doesn't say it. Now, before we go to Tosfot, let's jump back to Rashi. Rashi says, Gavra lo chazi kegon tvilat bale keri. Talking about someone who is a Baal Keri. Now, before I read the next line in Rashi, someone explain to me, why is a Baal Keri not allowed to, in what sense is he not Chazi? So, you've just described what a Keri is. So what? He's Tomei. So what? Is he allowed to make a bracha? What's the answer to that question? The answer to that question. It is a machloket. When is it a machloket? So it's a machloket in the Gemara, and how do we paskin? That he is allowed, that Bizman Ezeh, we uprooted it. There was Takanat Ezra. Right? Ezra said that someone who's Baal Keri is not allowed to learn Torah, is not allowed to make brachot. And the Gemara says that at some point, what did we do? Got rid of that. Right? That's a good question. That's a whole sugya in brachot. But we got rid of it. Why? Because the tzibur couldn't handle it. Right? It's, what? Someone had a seminal omission. Someone who had a seminal omission. Yes, what? No. No, no, no. A Jew. And it creates tumma. Right? And Ezra said that that tumma, right, normally that tumma has to do with things that are kodesh. Beit HaMikdash related things, truma, things like that. Ezra added that if someone had a seminal omission, in particular contexts, that he doesn't, he's not allowed to daven and allowed to learn. And the Gemara says that Tzibur couldn't handle it. Right? The Jewish people couldn't handle it, so we got rid of it. They couldn't handle it. It was crazy, right? They couldn't do it, right? It was like, right? It's in fact an extremely hard takana, right? Extremely hard takana, right? Right? I mean, the Gemara says the reason he did it, there are different shitot in the Bavli and the Rishalmi, right? The Bavli, it's shlotiu, tamid chum etel nesherotan katarna golan. It was to make sure that tamid chum wouldn't be their wives with their wives like chickens. That's what it means, right? It was to limit how often Tamid Chachamim were involved in marital intimacy.
Don't the Gur Chassidim, they still hold by this, don't they?
No. No. They, so many Chassidim go to the mikvah because, right, what's the logic? Is that the Gemara doesn't say it was a bad idea. The Gemara just says that the Tzibur couldn't handle it. So the minhag of some people to make sure to go to the mikvah, definitely after they've had a seminal mission, right? Right, which the classic case in the Gemara is in the context of marital intimacy. Right, the Yerushalmi is very clear about this, right? The Yerushalmi is like, yeah, it has to be. If there isn't a sex act involved, it's not metameh. And then the Gemara expands it and says, yes, but it could be that you don't actually need to have a sex act involved. It could be that any emission that is associated with the sex act, or therefore even if someone was dreaming, right, about sex and then had an emission, that would count, right? But an emission, remember you guys, we did this in Yerushalmi like 50 days ago or something, I don't know, right? Like 2 months ago. Correct, and that was the Gemara that went in, right, what about typical, right, exactly. So the point is that the Gemara says it couldn't handle it, but that implies that there is a value to it, so that's why many Chassidim do it. Now some go to the mikveh every day because they want to just be as tahor as possible. Right, regardless of whether they had a seminal mission or not. Now, there is one of these very funny tshuvot in the Mishnah Halachot where someone asked him, and he said, aha, Chassidim go to the mikveh every day are going against Ezra. Why?
So that they can be with their wives every day.
No, because Ezra wanted to make it inconvenient for people to be with their wives too much by instituting them going to the mikveh. But if they go to the mikveh all the time, then there's no longer an inconvenience. There's no an extra inconvenience when they're with their wives. So they've actually defeated the purpose of Ezra by making the mikveh something they do, even when it's not because they were with their wives. So they're undermining it, which is a great question for a Chassidish Rebbe. It's like, what do you think? Of course he defended it. It's like, no, but it was a beautiful question. I appreciated the question. I thought it was very clever. Anyways, the point is, Rashi says, Keri, because of Ezra. Now, what's the, so the obvious problem that's going to jump out at you is, what? We got rid of Takar and Ezra. No. Right? Look at Rashi. If you read Rashi, would you know this? He says, the Kaim Alan Bebracha, Chaser Bedevei Torah Ubebracha, the Ezra Tikin Vilal Barakrayin Ledevei Torah, Umishum Aidila Tikun Mechalat Vil Berachatan Lebasov. What? Ezra had instituted that once someone has too much carry, they can't daven, and they can't learn Torah. And therefore, they set up the tefillah basav. What? So it sounds like we pasca like Ezra, which we don't. So what is he... So it sounds like at the end, what is Rashi trying to do to defend himself from that?
I would guess Right, meaning he says, because of Takana Ezra, when they made the Takana on the Bracha, they made the Bracha at the end, right? So therefore, what is Rashi seeing? This is how I understand Rashi, is that there was a time at which all Tvilo, or most Tvilo, created a situation in which they were not Chazi for a Bracha. That, during that time period, they instituted Bracha. Now, even though we peeled back the Takana of Ezra, the formal rule stayed in place. Right? That's how I understand Rashi, tentatively, okay?
I'm going to say that this is my tentative opinion in Rashi, right? Which is, at some point, i.e. Takana of Ezra, many Tvilot were done in a state of what we would call lo chazi, and therefore the takana was for bracha after. Okay?
Something like that, right? But this is assuming that Rashi, right? I'm being medaic in the fact that Rashi said at some point it was lo chazi, right? And therefore they made the bracha basof, right? And therefore I'm drawing an implication from Rashi, which I admit is not explicit, that Rashi doesn't think nowadays, after the repeal of Takana Ezra, that someone is not chazi before they go to the mikvah.
Okay.
Right, that's what I'm being medayik. And even according to Rashi, at the time when it was lo chazi, which type of tefillah was lo chazi? Keri, because of Takanat Ezra. Right? Okay, let's look at Tosfot. Tosfot says, again, Omer Rabbeinu Chanan lo b'shem Hagaon, dafka b'tefillah ger lo chazi, kodem b'tefillah lo matzal me'er, tzivanu dakati nachrihu. Aval shar chai ve tvila kugon bal keri ve chayot ve motor levarech kid amrin berg me shemeto nog ama kid lotle savik keri huda be bal keri she yachol lehid valel levarech lelumot kodem tvila. What's his proof? We got rid of Takanat Ezra. And nowadays, therefore, even if somebody's tamei, is he allowed to daven? Yes, he's allowed to make a bracha. Yes, so why would you say that you can't go? So therefore, Rabbeinu Chananel says, Mapitam, right? Af al pi chein omeri. However, the Ri says, De'ein lig'or b'nashim shemivarchot achara tvila. Don't yell at women who make a bracha after they go to the mikvah because of tumat nida. Don't yell at them.
How would we know if they made the bracha or not?
They tell us. Well, don't protest. Don't yell at them.
Is there
right?
Any way that word, don't yell at them?
Ligar. Don't. Yeah, meaning. Well, rebuke. Ligar might mean to rebuke, yell. Rebuke, sure. Meaning, what does that imply? Is Ri sold on the svara that you make bracha afterwards? No, he's not sure. He just thinks he can justify it, right? And therefore he says, I'm not sure I'm convinced by it, but there is a logic, right? And what is the logic? Kevan de'iko tvilat ger de'lo matzi levarech. Since there is a case of tvila, namely ger, in which you can't make the bracha before, lo chilku, we didn't make a difference. That we call explicitly.
So this is definitely what? This is the Ri's defense of minhag nashem.
Right? And now he expands it. And he says, well, once you say it's lo plug, it's not only tvila. He says, I could expand the lo plug farther if you wanted, beyond tvila, but to what?
every situation in which I am removing some sort of tumah, which we call netilat yadayim. Chen netilat yadayim lo chilko benetilat shalachar berakisei. Delo matzi mavarech kodem. He's like, it's just like after you go to the bathroom, right? You can't, you have to wash your hands before you make a bracha. And therefore, all cases which you're washing your hands and your hands might be dirty and therefore you won't be able to make a bracha, you should always make a bracha after. Mew. Benetila yeshtam acher levarach acher netila. But there's another svara. But until yadayim, why should make the bracha after? Kodem nigov, before drying. Kedarina na ochel lechem lo nigov yadayim ki lo ochel lechem dami. But he said there's a second svara, and that is, how many of you wash, wait, say the bracha on until yadayim after you wash, before you dry? That's from Tosfot, this Tosfot. And the svara is that drying is part of the, is part of the netila, and therefore this is either before the mitzvah or last time, or during the mitzvah,
right,
depending on which sheet do you think he's holding, like.
Right, and if it's right before, and if it's right before the mitzvah, then it's probably even preferable because it's...
Correct, it goes closer, exactly. The yesh mefarshim, de bechol tvila kamar de gavar lo chazi. Whoa. So here, Tosfot raised the possibility that what? Why do all tefillah have the bracha before, after rather? Lo plug. Now he says maybe it's because
all tefillah are not chazik. Why not?
In what sense is every tefillah not chazik? So he gives, he says, Dilma mishim bi'atuta demaya mimna v'lo tafilo. So what, right? So here you could say
practical or fundamental, right? Right? What's the first answer? Practical, which is fear. Fear.
Is that the women might not go in? We're worried the women aren't gonna go in, they're gonna panic. Scary. Going to mikvah scary.
Very right? Scary.
So it is scary.
Back in the day.
Back in the day, when it could have been in a river, in the middle of Siberia, it could be freezing, right? It could be freezing cold. It could be that it's a river, right? It could be the ocean, right? Meaning a natural body of water. It could be even built mikvah were sometimes natural bodies of water. They were just structures, right? Like I know that Ora told me that one summer camp, I won't say which one, but one summer camp, their mikvah is just
a hole in the ground.
No, it's not a hole in the ground. It's like a building over a part of the lake, and like it's pitch black, and they don't have a balanit on staff, right? Like a woman to be there at the mikvah. So like, you know, either you get a woman to go with you, or there is a kula that your husband's allowed to go specifically then, because even though, right, normally there are a lot of harchakot when a woman's in nida, right, the husband and the wife at the distance, when they're actually going to the mikvah, right, he can be there because, like, you know, literally by definition, she's going to be permitted with it, you know, by the end of the process, right? And you go, like, basically in the pitch black with a flashlight into this little hovel thing built over the lake or whatever the body of water is there, right? And you go down, like, a rickety ladder, right? It's like there are mikvot like this, you know? And like a lot of people, they go on vacation. I know, like I listened at some point to an interview with the Chabad of like Hawaii or something. I don't have, I think it was, they don't, or for many years they never have a mikvah. So people who needed to go to the mikvah when they were on vacation, the Chabad woman would take them down to the ocean in the middle of the night. You know, like it can be scary. So Tosfot said, look, practically, we're not sure they're going to go through with it. And therefore, make the bracha afterwards, which is a big chiddush. Because like, when did the Gemara raise a similar parallel svara? In the Gemara. The Gemara said, maybe if I shofar, you're worried you're going to mess up. The Gemara says, once you say that, that's true of every bracha in the world. Right? So you'd have to say that this is quantitatively more likely that the woman won't end up going. Right? Which is very odd. That's answer one.
But plausible.
Right? V'achajar azu arum. So he says, what's the problem? He says, look, here's the problem. Is their practice, it's, they're scared. So when they go to the mikveh, we're not sure it's going to happen. We're pretty sure that, so he comes up with the following psychological claim. He says, look, when the woman comes and she's still fully dressed, right? She just gets to the mikveh and she sees the water, or she doesn't see it because it's pitch black, and she freaks out. If her says the bracha then, while she's still dressed, we're afraid.
That is the bracha.
Good. Once she's completely ready for the mikvah and unclothed and ready to go in, we're pretty sure she's going to go into the mikvah. Except, can't say a bracha, right? She can't say a bracha, right? Asu arm asu lebarach mishum de libo roa et erva. Right, now we're going to have to come back to this point of libo roa et erva. Right, so therefore he said it's some combination of practical slash financial.
But Rabbi, right? There's a way around it.
Right. Some combination of practical and this.
But Rebbe,
right?
Once she's in the water to the point where her erva is covered, like her head is above, then but she hasn't actually emerged.
Ah, very good.
Yet.
So in order to figure out whether Tosfos is right, you have to figure out, right? Libo, Roach, Erva. What's the, what is this rule that we speak of? Good, hold that thought.
Cool.
Okay?
Thank you.
Hold that thought. Now, before we go on to the Mishnah here, look at the Rush. Turn to the Rush. Right, this time I didn't give you the Rush. I told you to look at it inside. I was mean. I'm sorry. I wanted you to remind, wanted you to remember that it exists. Right. So you look at the Rush in Aleph Yud. Towards the end. So he says that it's the end of Yud, like the last 10 lines of Yud. Tan Rabbanan.
There we go.
Tavval v'Allah b'latom v'bracha. Mefarshil Rabbanan v'tfilat ger bilvad ka'amar. That this is only by ger. D'lo matzil nemer kodim tfilah asher k'nishan z'tav. Aval shar chai v'tfilat mevarchen. V'ach kach tov v'nakayim l'nida kotza l'chalo v'mechai v'l'bruch l'hafrish chalo. He says, right, he pushes it farther. Why? How do I know that a nida can make the bracha? Because she's allowed to make bracha the entire time that she's a Nida, okay. Right? And she came off her shkala. No, she came off her, meaning whatever. Which, whatever. Va'ana nami gabi zav shira keri. V'nida shvokho jevazer tzvichan tvila. Time at the ra keri pal shechazer tzvichan tvila. Halo ra keri. Lo pal da shechvazer akori v'malvein tzvichan tvila. And even though we paskin that a woman can even be tamei keri, how she tamei keri, if the semen comes back out of her body, right, then she's tamei keri, and you'll tell me, is that possible? The answer is yes, of course, it's possible. It happens all the time, right? This is not like science fiction. This is, in fact, reality. What? Science fact, which you might not have known, but now you know. I'm sorry if this makes you uncomfortable. What? For her to become tummy, it has to come out. Right? Meaning inside of her, it's not tummy hair, but if it comes out, which it can. Oh, you're tummy. What a problem. It's tummy. Viri mefaresh. But Ri says, Dein limchot bin nashrim devar chot achar tzvil lo kodem. Right, so he explicitly used the language of loplog. Right, he has a slightly different explanation than tefillat yadayim problem, and that is, you usually can't, or never can make bracha on tefillat yadayim in the morning until you've washed, because your hands are dirty in ways that forbid you from making a bracha, right? It's basically always, right? I mean, maybe if you like tied your hands, right? Like while you were sleeping, you know, you tied them, whatever, right? Tied them out so that they wouldn't touch any part of your body that makes them dirty in the way that you can't daven, right? You could be sure that you could wash, but like... Sure, tape gloves to your hands. That. Those are all extreme measures, which you do not need to take. Thank you. Done, right? That's correct.
Could one take this measure on a singular occasion just to prove the point?
If one is crazy, one can do such things.
One can do anything.
And he says, right, so therefore, Rush has a slightly different formulation, which is that basically, Netilat Yadayim in the morning is definitional, right? Because it's basically always going to be the case that when you wake up in the morning, your hands are either dirty or you can't be sure they're not, because dirty just means they touched any covered part of the body, right? Which, unless you slept with gloves or tied your hands down or, you know, wrapped the rest of your body in such a way, what? Yeah, sure, if you have a guard watching you all night to make sure your hands don't move, right? Or whatever other creepy thing you're coming up with just to make some weird halachic point. And therefore, right, the Rosh seems to say that at some fundamental level, Netilat Yadayim, in the morning is such that you have to make the bracha afterwards. What about it by a meal? By a meal, it's more plausible that your hands are clean before. So what does he answer? Lopuk. Right? So you can have, like, mixes, right? So the Rosh says that
Netilat Yadayim in the morning is lochazi, and, right, other Netilot are lo plug.
What's lochazi again?
You're not lo ra'ui. It's not proper for you to make a bracha. You're not able to make a bracha at that point. V'od yisham acher b'netila. And then he gives the other one, kevin de mavarech, kodim niguv, gamzum into netila, and then he brings the drawings tomorrow, just like we saw in Tzitzit. Okay? Good. Someone want to give me another svara? In what other way might you say that someone who needs to go to the mikvah is lochazi? So we had one, but we have a practical possibility. We have Rashi's sort of historical reason, which is there was a time after Khanat Ezra where it was lochazi, right? And therefore we made a loplug based on the fact that at some point in history it was lochazi, right? Someone want to give me another svara? Why would it be that someone who needs to go to the mikvah for, let's say, keri or nida or whatever is considered lochazi, right? Not able to make a bracha, even though is a person who is tamei tumat keri allowed to make a bracha nowadays? Yes. Is a nida allowed to make bracha?
Yes.
Yes. So in what sense could you possibly say that a woman is lochazi or a man is lochazi?
It's not ideal because you have, you are tamei now, but you know, afterwards you won't be so...
Very good.
You'll be better off saying after because you'll be in the...
Right? Very good. Right, so what Mo says is no, there's a very easy answer here, which is,
look, going, right, bracha, when tamei is less than ideal, right?
Now, in general, a woman's going to need a for... however long, right? 11 days, 12 days, depending on which minhag you're talking about now, Ashkenazim and Sephardim, it's going to be a, right, nida for a while. So you can't tell her not to daven for, you know, 11 days every month or 12 days every month or whatever, right? You can't do that. But that's a far cry from saying you're going to be tahara in 30 seconds and saying, just wait. Right? Like, we all understand that, right? Like, we have many examples like this. So, for example, right, we'll tell you, lechatila, you should daven nicely for davening, right? So if you're dressed in shorts and a t-shirt and you're schwitzy and whatever, I'd say that's not ideal for davening. But if this is yam liyam or whatever and it's about to be shkia, we'll say, okay, you have a shirt on, you have shorts on, that's enough halachically, right? If the guy was naked, we would say that's not good enough halachically, even b'shat ha'chak, right? But if he was at least in a shorts and a t-shirt or something like that, we'd say, okay, I mean, you wouldn't go in front of a king like this, you know, schwitzied and yam liyamed, right? Sure, but ain't my lasso.
If the alternative was not going in front of the king at all.
Correct. So Mo says a version of that here, right? Mo says a version of that here, which is, look, it might be that fundamentally a nida is allowed to make brachot. A balkeri nowadays, post-Hakadosh Ezra, is allowed to make brachot. But that's because the tzibur couldn't handle it with Tfilat Ezra. We couldn't handle that you weren't allowed to go to the, right? You weren't allowed to daven every time you were talking about keri. But that's not what we're saying here. We're saying, wait 30 seconds. Right? Maybe you'd say, well, chazi means if you have the opportunity to do it in the ideal way, where you're tahor, and there is a value to being tahor. So, if at all possible, you should take advantage of that opportunity. Who says a version of that? Marm Chalafa and the Miri, right? Both have versions of exactly that argument. Right? That lochazi here is that, yes, you can say a bracha when you're tameh, but it's not ideal. And therefore, it's better to take advantage of waiting so that you're tahor. Yes? You got the basic contours? Let's hold it 1 second. Let's read it inside, right?
Actually, yeah. Is there an opinion that says that, let's say, for any action and then the bracha for that action, is there an opinion that says if you do the action and then you say the bracha afterwards, that you did the action without a bracha and you just did the bracha yourself?
Yes.
That is
an opinion. Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so look at the Maram Chalava. Chutz mina tvila bilvad. Itmar. Klomar tvila ger bilvad. Dakati lo chazi lo matzer lo meimar betzivani. So he says, when are they lo chazi? Tvila ger. Ger. Mikradim. Vafilu hachi, nevertheless. Tiknu bechol hatzvilot. Al, v'chein al-tel adayim she'en ke'en tvila. Sh'ratu lachok l'nosach ha'bracha. He said, however, first point he says, there is, even according to Rabbi Hananel, there is one implication to the fact that tvilat ger is done afterwards, and that is that we keep the girsa of the bracha, right. Al. Because since there is at least one circumstance in which it happens afterwards, and al can mean past tense as well, we keep the bracha al. That's his first point. Inami. The netilat yadayim. Zim nidlo chazi gon shay dumi misha yadam nidlo chachot. And he said, look, second point is that netilat yadayim, sometimes it's actually not chazi. Right? When your hands are dirty. Right? That's right then.
So this was Rash,
Maharam,
Halava,
Jew.
Okay.
Right? Utvila, Mishum de Loma Varchina, and Mitzvah Muzmenet Lefanav Lasota. By Tvila, you only make the bracha when you're ready to perform it. Ukshaisha Omedet Likanez Bimayim Arumahi. What's the problem? When a woman's about to go into the mikvah, she is naked, right? And you need machanecha kadosh, or the obligation that the camp should be holy, and that doesn't happen after tefillah. She alta v'nitlapsha, she got out and got dressed. And we don't require her to cover herself and make bracha, de'ika bi'atuta demaya, kama de'shohi. Because the longer she stays, the more scared she's going to be. Mishum hachi tiknu kulu ba'al. Therefore, everything is al. So what does that sound like? What does he think? She says it. Sounds like afterwards, right? Even though he never said that.
Right. He's giving them the option.
Right? It's not clear if it's an option or he thinks she does say it. Is that which we say that a nida that a zav shara carry or a nida shabal tishkozer that she needs tvila? That's not leaning halacha. Why the hashtag batul the tviluta? We got rid of the tvila of Yehuda ben Beteira because Armina and Ain did return with kavlan toma. And what's the logic of Gemara? Why did it get rid of Takana Ezra? So one is that the tzibur couldn't handle it. The other is Yehuda's principled position, which is Torah is not Mekabel Tumah. And therefore he said, and therefore fundamentally, Anita and Azav are allowed to make it before. And so what does it sound like according to him? Sounds like it's really you should make it before. The problem is, when should you make it before? When she's dressed. But the problem is, if we make her stay there with her clothes and hang out longer, because that means she has to take her towel, right? I mean, dress doesn't mean all her clothes necessarily. It could mean her robe. It could mean her towel. It could be whatever, right? Right, meaning it's really she did before, but like, if she says it after, because she's so scared that she doesn't want to stay there another second, right, and she's unclothed and whatever, then it sounds like she could sort of say it afterwards.
And then assumedly, if it's somebody that you know, he's brave, you know that she's going
to run. Right, but ostensibly, according to him, right, if the woman is brave, or alternatively, she's in a gorgeous, gorgeous modern mikvah where there's no reason to be afraid.
Well, yeah.
Right?
Or that. Then would it
no,
be...
No, no. Okay, so I should just point out that when you read things like this, it's important to realize that the world has changed a little bit. A little bit, because when you read like classic Rishonim, what are they all assuming of the mikvah? Scary, right? You have a tshuva in the Rambam, and we'll come to this in a little bit, where he says, yes, sometimes you have women who refuse to go to the mikvah. If a woman refuses to be with her husband, what's that called? Moredet. Right? And if a husband refuses to be with his wife, Moret, and there's implications for Ksuba, and if a woman is Moretted after a certain number of weeks, she gets divorced, she loses her Ksuba. The Rambam is a case, what if the woman is refusing to go to the mikvah because it's cold, it's freezing? You know what he says? Moretted. Too bad. Moretted. Right? Moretted. Which means that you see that what? So what does that show you, though? What does that show you about the mikvah? And we're going to come back to this. The heated, it looks like we actually take two days or half of next year, which is fine.
Because it's got to be worse.
Right, you see that it was, right, that their mikvah were cold, and we'll see the halachic reasons for that. And, you know, I'll run through that for you, that they were cold. Mikvot were...
I mean, you see them across Israel. They're just like giant holes in the ground that like...
Right, these were outside, blah, blah, blah. However,
what
right?
If somebody finds a body in the
mix? Nowadays, you will see that there is a right a huge emphasis on making sure that mikvot are what? Gorgeous, right? Gorgeous.
Yes.
And especially comfortable because, what?
Especially women's mikvot.
Now, men's mikvot are disgusting. Yeah. Usually. No. That is true. You don't understand what nice is. Right? So, for example, right, like in Efrat, there's a really beautiful mikvah. We have four mikvahs in Efrat. Really beautiful mikvah. They have an even more beautiful, beautiful mikvah for a kala. I remember in Alon Shvut, I once got a tour of the mikvah because one of their Rebbeim in Gush, his family donated the mikvah because his whole family, basically his great grandfather, I think, was known as Mikvah Max. People were not makbid on mikvah like 75 years ago in America. And there was like a few people that really pushed, like made their life goal, like getting people to go back to mikvah in America. And one of them was his great grandfather, Mikvah Max. So his family is very supportive. So like the Kala mikvah, I kid you not, has a mosaic on the floor and a fake palm tree over the mikvah, right? I saw that they were raising money for the Boca Raton mikvah this week. They just redid it, and it has, like, beautiful gold chandeliers. Modern mikvah tends to be very nice.
So it's not just, like, a nice heated pool type feel. It's just, like, it's actually...
Yeah, I mean, the one in there's one in Toronto, which... So many mikvah, you know, have different, like, one mikvah and different than, like, changing rooms, right?
Right.
There's one in Toronto that just has 15 separate mikvah. Like, each room has its own mikvah. They just made a separate bore. Right, mikvahs can be very nice nowadays.
Well, yeah, the one time that I went to a mikvah, because of the experience.
Oh, a lot. These mikvahs cost millions.
Right. And to make or to make use each time.
No, if you do want to go to a mikvah here in Honey, the Chabad one is the...
I Googled beautiful mikvah just to give you an idea of the difference of what you're talking about between what you're reading in Poskim and what we have now. This is one mikvah.
Fascinating.
Okay. Here's another one. This is the waiting room in one.
What?
Okay. See?
Literally a hotel.
Yes, it is. Chandeliers, painting. So this is the reason that we do this is partially because when you read all these tshuvot, because look, why do we do this? Because the reason that we do this is that like when you read these old tshuvot, okay, this is just like a life lesson. The reason that people are obsessed with this is because we want women to be comfortable going to a mikvah, and as you can read in all these tshuvot. I didn't make it up. They're saying they are terrified of going into the water. We're not sure they're going to make it in. So nowadays we're like, how do we solve this? I know. Let's make a mikvah that isn't terrifying.
Let's make a gold chandelier.
Yeah, so that's what we do.
That'll draw them in.
For the record, this is important. Okay? I remember when Rav Schreiber gave us this shiur when I was in Gush. That it's his family who funds the mikvah. And he's like, it is important for all of you to make sure that the community that you one day live in has a beautiful mikvah. Okay? It is important to make sure. I have now made my speech. It is important because you don't really want to be reading Shuvot like this. The woman didn't go to the mikvah because she was terrified, right? We're never sure she's going to make it, right? Like, wow, right? Like, that's a scary... It's scary, right? You don't want this.
I remember learning the Sagetta notes here about if there's a dead body floating in the mikvah. If you notice it beforehand or if it's afterwards, or if there's a dead animal floating in the mikvah. If it's below the water or above the water, floating above the water, on top of the water, then there's a difference.
It's before the water, and you only notice once you've dunked down.
Yeah. On the other hand, from personal experience, men's mikvah, or men who just decide I'm going to go to a random pit of water, a mayan, which is the Israeli thing to do, are terrifying. Yeah. There's one in Bat Ayin, which is like near Ish Gush, like a 15-minute walk maybe. And my Shana Aleph, we went, like a few of us decided to go down there. So first of all, it's unbelievably terrifying because you basically have to walk like vertically down a steep cliff to get in it. No one warned us this, and we're wearing like water shoes and stuff like that. And then when you get there, they tell you, oh, by the way, there are leeches in it. So afterwards, you have to like pull leeches. It's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah.
I went once. I did not go.
You just pull it off.
Yeah, anyways, and I'm not getting to it. Point is that there are still mikvot that are crazy. There was another time I wanted to go to the one in Rosh Tzurim. And they told us, that wasn't as bad. They were like, no, the one in Rosh Tzurim is being, there were Palestinians throwing Molotov cocktails at it. I'm like, yeah, not worth it. This minhag, I'm just going to not do it. I'm just not going to do it this Erev Yom Kippur,
the water cave.
This is not a mikvah. This is not a mikvah. This is a hole in the ground in the middle of the mountain.
Fine. The water cave in your David?
Yeah.
I mean, like, coming out of it. Like,
right, yeah.
There
okay.
was a guy just, like, going into the mikvah on the other
side. Right. Okay. Fine. Anyways, that's an aside. Just to highlight to you the why... and we'll come to it more. I guess it'll take two. I didn't think I was going to take two dozen. This is really not such a long suga, but the truth is there's a lot of important points, life points here. Fine. Look at Miri. Miri says in 4. Sheme achar shemitzvilat bal keri hutkino habracha la'acharat vila. Since by bal keri we make the bracha after tvila, apechol habracha, okay. Chayn dan atosvot. Wait, what? What did he just say? What's his paradigm? Is it Gare? No, it's Kerry. Huh. Why? V'chein da'ato da'achar tvilat Gare. Gam genut kochein. V'ani omer. And I say it's not a low plug. Ela, shemin adin ein ro'ui levarech ela achar hatvila. Halachically, you should only make bracha after. Why? K'detani stama chutz min hatvila v'lomer chutz mi tvilat Gare o bal Kerry. What's his proof? It says, chutz mi tvila. Doesn't specify which tvila, which implies all, right? V'chei stama tavav ala baliyata omer bracha asher k'dishanu ala tvila. And he says, but wait a second. V'afag av denida kocha l'chala muvarechet. Even though we said, but Anida can make bracha. Forget takanat Ezra. Maybe at some point you couldn't. But Anida, she's allowed to make bracha, right? Lo egiyas man tfilata ume'ach she'ot ha'amit ve'en roi lafkiyat berkata mikol v'achol. He said, look, in general, you can't tell a woman she can't make bracha for 12 days every month. Right? So you can't do that. But, aval tfila she'ba achshav l'taher. But when she's about to go to the mikvah, this is Moe's point. No achlana shetam zanat shetitvol de bracha tkufa l'tfila kodem shetit nageh. He says, then, you should do it. Why? Because it's not the ideal. The ideal is to make brachot when you're pure. You're allowed to make it when you're not. That's true. But when you have the option of waiting 30 seconds and making the bracha afterwards, and he says, make sure that it's right as soon as you can, make sure it's right before she dries.
Okay.
Call Jezreel and Akil, Yasher Koicha, right? Shkoyech. That's the best thing to do. Vaharaya sharei nitil idan dinga gom shlo barach chido vivarach achar nigo veaval pishla dat moshe v'yom daim betishu av yom kimeinu nimishar bracha mikom kol shu balitol in barach chiyitol kol she efshar lo benetiyot kachu biroli. Right, and his rule is whenever you could make the bracha in a more clean state, it's better. Veaval pishu amar dakat gavi lo chazi. He says, wait a second, that's not what lo chazi means. Lo chazi means what? You're not allowed to make the bracha. What does he say? Lishna Ravicha. It's take it expansively. Revach. Right? Meaning, don't be such a stickler. Lochazi means it's not ideal. Doesn't just mean it's not roi. It means not ideal. Chlomar sheinu naki legamrei. So even if someone's not fully clean, in a roi levarach, it's not the best thing. Achit nakeh hovu samach lenetiyako v'chein ikar. So the Meiri says, no, it's not a low plug. It's that. At some level, it's still not ideal. If a woman could be tahor in a second, you could be cleaner in just a minute. Because you're going to wash your hands. You're going to go to the mikvah. Your bracha would be nicer. And therefore, if it's so close, it's fine. Now, admittedly, as Gabe pointed out before, what is hanging in the background here? I think it was Gabe who said, right? The issue of a bracha, maybe it was Mo, yeah. Right? Was how much do you think that a bracha made afterwards is a bracha of Atala? Right? If you think that, like, no, bracha can never be made afterwards, and the only way it's afterwards is if there's a special takana and only under extenuating circumstances, you're not going to say something like the Miri. Well, it's better, it's this, it's that, right? You're going to say, if you literally cannot make the bracha before, so maybe Chazal made a takana that you can make it after. But in any other circumstance, it has to be before.
Well, it would just be how you word it. We say, right?
No, but if you think you're never allowed to make a bracha afterwards, right? And that goes back to Ober Lasiatan, is how much do you think it has to be before? How much is that better, during, after? And all the discussions we saw there.
Okay.
right? If you think that it's better, right? But you could make it after, you could make it during, you could make it whatever. So then you're more likely to take some sort of shahr like the Meiri, where, okay, but it's, you could do it in a better way.
Okay.
Right? Something like that, right? So obviously this is going to hang on that. Okay. I see we have like 10 minutes. Yeah. Okay. So let me throw out to you, and you tell me basically whether you want me to go in depth into what is the rest of here, because this is the end basically of what is linked immediately to our sugya.
Right.
But the practical, now I need 2 minutes to explain this. The practical issue is more complicated. The practical issue of whether a nidah makes a bracha before or after she goes to the mikvah hangs on two other major sugya. Three other major sugya. Okay? And that is the following. One is,
I'm gonna move this.
Okay?
Okay.
I'm just gonna make a little box here. There are three sugya that you have to know, and I would like you to at least have a vague understanding of them. Okay, it's not related to our sugya, but it is to the practical application of it. Okay?
So one issue is the one we just saw, which is the over lasiyat al sugya. The second is ri'iyat erva. The third is libo roeh et ha'erva. These are actually two different sugya,
right? One is that the parts of your body that are uncovered are now, they're normally covered or uncovered. The second is they're not uncovered, but there's no separation between your heart and your erva, right? You're not, right? So for a man, you're not allowed to make a bracha if either of these two are violated, right? So if your erva is showing,
you can't,
right? But if you're wearing a toga, right, you also can't because there's nothing separating between the upper half of your body and the lower half of their body, right? So that's libo roa et erva. Okay, those are two variations. Now, obviously, if someone is unclothed, potentially both of these are in play. But
what you need to ask here is, how do they apply differently to women?
And why would they apply differently to women?
Because they have here.
No, it's actually more makil. It's not more mahan, it's more makil. Shalom, why is it more makil? This is not complicated. Very good.
Okay,
thank you. Yeah, thank you. This was not like, right? That's what it is.
Okay,
right? Where you need to, I know it's like uncomfortable to say, but the point is, yeah, the point is that for a woman, right, when the erva is uncovered, it's still not sticking out, right? Because that's not how her erva looks, right? Therefore, the standards are different, right? So you have to analyze these two issues. You don't have to be embarrassed. This is like basic anatomy. You know this.
Right? I hope you know this. Well.
Right? Right? And fourth, what the fourth issue is?
But I never had a health class.
Is merchatz.
That's illegal.
The fourth issue is merchatz. What's merchatz? So here's the problem, okay? As you guys probably know, you don't make a bracha in dirty places. You don't make it in the bathroom, right? So here's the thing. The general standard is that you can't make a bracha in a merchatz. Merchatz is a bathhouse. What is a bathhouse defined as?
So this is one of the requirements, which is?
Hevel. What's hevel?
Steam.
Steam. Right? The fact there's like steam everywhere. You know, like you go to like a sauna, whatever.
Steam
it's like,
room.
Yeah, a steam room, and it's just like, right? Exactly. A schwitz. That steam is part of what makes it, right, dirty. Here's the problem.
Is that there's a machloket bishonim
as to whether a mikvah is allowed to be hot at all or freezing cold.
Allowed.
Because, so these are two related issues. I'll make this five. One is the problem of making a bracha in a merchatz, which is related to the question of, are you allowed to
have a hot mikvah. And the reason is because a mikvah needs to be a natural body of water. Historically, how did you make a mikvah hot? How did you make a mikvah hot? You had to pour in hot water, which is shu'uvin, right? Or you had to take the Rishonim have a case of you take a red hot piece of metal and you drop it into the mikvah and hope it warms up the water around it. The problem was that this creates a problem of people thinking that, right, it makes it look too much like a bath, right? And because in a bath, you have an easier way of doing it, which is you basically would go to a bath in a giant pot, right? That was what these old things looked like, right? Where, like, the warm ones, there's a fire underneath, but it's a kli, and therefore it can't be a mikvah. So there's a machlok we've shown him, is it usher to go to a non-naturally heated mikvah, meaning not like a hot spring. You could go to a hot spring because it would look like a bath, right? And if you thought that you were allowed to have a hot mikvah, then what?
Then it would not be a merchatz.
Then it would be a merchatz.
Oh.
Because it would be steamy. And therefore you wouldn't be allowed to make a bracha in the room where the mikvah is. Right? So practically, these are all the factors that go through it. So you tell me how much you want to go into it, but I will tell you that Bigadol, the following. Standard Sephardi minhag is that women make a bracha before they go into the mikvah. Standard Ashkenazi minhag is after, or more precisely, as we'll see, the mikvah is during. Correct. They do two tefillah. Right? They go in, their head comes up, they say the bracha, and they go back down. But then you got to figure out, but isn't she unclothed? Does the water count? Does it solve these problems? Right? It's a complicated sugya. Ask the question of whether you're allowed to have a hot mikvah. The answer is like this. There were many Rishonim who thought the answer was no. By the time you got to Shulchan Aruch, it divided that the Ramah said you can have a hot mikvah, and Shulchan Aruch said you cannot. Nowadays, I don't think you will find a posek in the world, though maybe you will, who paskins like the Mechaber, because there is a tradition that Mechaber changed his mind later in life, right? And Lamaisa, nowadays, mikvot are all warm, to the point where if a mikvah is not warm, like I know in Efrat, if one of the mikvot is not warm, they just close it for the night, and they send people to the other mikvot, right? Forget saying you're not allowed to be in a hot mikvah. We know that no one wants to go into a not warm mikvah, what? Yeah, because no one's going to go. So, and we have three other mikvahs, so whatever. You tell me. My feeling is just because it is an important halacha l'maisa sugya that it's worth, even if we don't read all these sources inside, taking the beginning of next year to at least map out the basics of this. If you decide you don't want to, that's fine. Meaning, like I said, the part of our sugya that actually connects to what's in our Gemara, we've done. The practical issue of why there's a machloket mechaber Ramah, right, on this isn't only talui in our sugya, it's talui in these five questions. Right? What? Okay, so we'll go over it. If these sources overwhelm you and you don't want to read them inside, that's okay. They're not actually shayach to our sugya, but to get the practical issue, it is important. So.
Okay. Yeah,